got into Satanism itself. And when you got into Satanism, actually the average Mason really doesn't have any idea what this is all about, does he?
No, most Masons are clueless. I mean, and I mean that in the most loving sense of the word, but because they get into it, just like, unfortunately, a lot of Christians don't read their Bible, a lot of Masons don't read the books that they have on their shelves in their lodge temples to read, and so they just assume this is some nice little good old boys club, and their father was in it, and their grandfather was in it, and therefore it must be a good thing. So they just assume this is some wonderful thing, and that's all there is to it.
Well, now, of course, you knew that that wasn't true when you first got involved. Why, you recognized the fact that this really was an occult movement?
Well, yes, because, see, I had been told when I was, because, of course, being raised Catholic, I knew very little about, Masonry, because in my day, those two never crossed the paths. But when I was down studying with the high Druid of North America, you know, he told me he was a 33rd degree Mason, and he indicated that if I really wanted to understand the full meaning of the craft, which is a term that both witches use and Masons use, he said I should become a Master Mason. That would add greatly to my spiritual understanding of witchcraft. And so that's why when the opportunity came along, I did become an apprentice and later on became a Master Mason.
Well, when did you meet Manly P. Hall?
Well, let me see. That would have been around 1978, 1979, somewhere in there.
Well, he was getting on in years even then. He was, of course, for our listeners out there, Manly P. Hall was certainly the leading occult philosopher of modern times. When he died, the Scottish Rite magazine said he was the greatest of all Masonic philosophers, and I think he really was. Certainly in his Lost Keys of Freemasonry, the lectures in ancient philosophy, and so many of his books, he laid out this whole incredible story of what Masonry is really all about, saying that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity made up of good men who really enjoyed, of course, the camaraderie, but an inner fraternity of men who study the Arcanum and Conorum, meaning the secret and the secret of secrets. And there is just a very, very small, or relatively small number of people who are taken into the upper echelons of Masonry. Now, what's the difference between the rites of Memphis and Mithraeum that you were with and the Palladian rites?
Well, of course, both of those are rites rites of Masonry that most Masons in America don't even know exist. But the rite of Memphis, Mithraeum, is basically what is called Egyptian Freemasonry, as the title might indicate. And essentially in that thing, you learn how to communicate with the higher planes. It's much more openly occultic, whereas there's just hints of the occult in, like, Scottish Rite and York Rite. And it basically prepares you to like, do things like go out on the astral plane, to have, to have mediumship develop and be able to speak with ascended masters and, that kind of thing. Well, then, the Palladium, which is even a more inner branch of this whole thing, there you actually learn how to, and this sounds really bizarre for most people, but how to enter into a relationship with what at that time we were told were ascended masters or high level, demonic spirits, and actually marry these entities and become one with them on the physical plane, in really bizarre fashion, and in this way, it was supposed to help us rise to a higher level of consciousness and become a rather than a Homo sapiens, to become a highly evolved superhuman being.
Oh, that's really so familiar. So, Barbara Marx Hubbard, when she writes about, for our listeners who don't know, Barbara Marx Hubbard ran for the vice president of the United States on the Democratic ticket in 1994 against Geraldine Ferraro. Fortunately, she lost, but she's one of the wealthiest women in the world. And in the original text of her book, the Book of Co-Creation, she talked about, those people who could ascend to a higher level of consciousness, and then, of course, those who would resist the level of going to this higher level of consciousness, they would have to be destroyed. And she was really talking about Christians. She said that 25% of the population was in that category, and that was not our job to do that. That was her job, for, as she said, we are the riders of the pale horse, death, referring to Revelation 6. So certainly this higher level of consciousness, what is this? Is this sort of a different way of thinking? Is it some sort of a spiritual experience? What is this higher level of consciousness that Barbara Marx Hubbard and your teachers were talking about?
Well, it's really both of the things you said. It is a different way of thinking, and it's induced by partly the use of drugs, by meditation, and things like that. You basically evolve to a point where you begin to lose touch with your emotions, and you lose all sense of compassion. You lose all sense of, you know, you basically start looking at you know, the term we used to use was mehums. We would call human beings mehums, meaning mere humans. And we were something greater than that. And so at one point, it's like a metaphysical experience where you become one with Lucifer. And just like, you know, a Christian seeks to have oneness with God, to have, you know, the Holy Spirit come and dwell in us. Well, for everything God does, Satan has a counterfeit. And his counterfeit is what some of these people call the Luciferian initiation, which is another term for this, where basically you have this blinding light of Lucifer fill your head and open up supposedly these higher channels of consciousness where you're able to perceive the unity of all things. And of course there is no God. You know, that's the great understanding, is that you are God. And so therefore, you know, you make your own rules and you transcend good and evil.
Well, I think that really is the most difficult thing for people to understand, and yet this is exactly what we are teaching our children in school today. We want you to learn to make decisions. We give you values clarification where you decide who's thrown out of the lifeboat. If there's only room for six and there are three or four, there are too many people, maybe there are 9 or 10 people, we'll have to throw out four. You learn to decide to make the decision. And when you, of course, become the determinant of what's right and wrong, then you become as your own God, or as Aleister Crowley said, do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. Is that pretty much what it's all about?
Well, ultimately, yes. And, of course, although a lot of these New Age-type people might not know who Crowley was, they don't realize that basically what he is telling is the same thing that they are saying, just he was more out in the open with it.
Right. Well, you know, of course, Crowley, in his autobiography, talked about having been a member of the Masons for many years, having been even a 33rd degree Mason for a number of years, before he was tapped to join the upper echelons of this satanic rites within Masonry. Is that pretty common? Now, you actually got through much, much sooner than that.
Well, yeah, and of course what you've got to realize is that, you know, Satan is speeding up his program, and there's basically a couple of generations between my experience and Crowley's experience, and, you know, but it's very much the same process. But I think, you see, in like a generation before me, it would take years, for example, to become a 32nd degree Mason. And in my period, well, like I went through this in the late 70s and early 1980, yeah, I did it in 2 months. You know, and that's not just something weird with me. I mean, there was like dozens of guys with me, and we all sat in the theater and watched a bunch of ceremonies being done, and poof, we were 32nd degree Masons.
Right.
So even though that sounds very impressive, it really isn't. And that, of course, was not the way it was in England in the days of when Crowley was coming up through the ranks.
Well, now, of course, were there many people who were going into these satanic rites with you?
No, and no. There were many Masons that were going through 32nd degree with me,
but very, very few were taken into the upper echelon.
Yes, exactly. And you're right. That's kind of how it works. You go into, like I started. I happened to start out in York Rite first, rather than the Scottish Rite, which is because right after the Blue Lodge of Masonry, it forks off into two branches, and you can do both, which I eventually did. But just after a couple of years of being involved in Masonry, because of some of the little things I was told to say and some of the little key words I gave, I was shunted off in an entirely different direction and given, you know, the more esoteric stuff. And that's how it works. That's probably the same thing that happened with Crowley.
Well, I think they recognize he would be a good candidate, become a Satanist right along with him. Now, the material that you learn here, of course, it has to do with your relationship to Lucifer and this realization that you are God, that you can do exactly what you want to. But when you do this, is there additional power that comes to you at that point? Are you really, you mentioned selling your soul to Lucifer. Is there some sort of a bargain that you strike? You're going to get something in return? Because even at that point, you must have realized the implications of what you were doing.
Well, yeah, and of course, see, by that time, I was so deceived. I believed that Satan, Lucifer, we weren't talking about Lucifer than Satan, that he was the true God. It was sort of like the Gnostics, where they say the God of the Bible is the false God and that the true God is the light bearer. And so I believe by doing that, I was actually making a choice, like, Christians talk about making a decision for Christ. Well, I thought I was making a decision for Lucifer and that was the right decision to make. But yes, in return, I was promised that I would have 7 years of absolute power. I could have anything I wanted, all the wealth, all the women, all the drugs, whatever I wanted. And then at the end of that 7-year period, he would either kill me and take me to hell, or else he would, so to speak, re-up my contract and I would get another 7 years. And of course, before everybody kind of freaks out, we were taught that hell was a good place. The way it was explained to us is that heaven was basically a place for boring losers who would sit around all day twanging on a harp, whereas hell was a place where you'd have nonstop orgies and drugs, and it was for the people who were the masters. There was a lot of kind of Nietzschean-type talk, like the philosopher Nietzsche, and the idea that, that Christianity is a slave religion, and that what we had, Luciferian religion, was a religion for masters.
Well, it's really very interesting as I read, of course, Masonic literature and Albert Pike. This sudden realization of what Pike was really saying. And that is that the God of the Bible has all these restrictions on you. Thou shalt not, commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet. You're going to do this and this, and you're not going to do this and this. And, of course, the point he made was that God puts all these restrictions on you. But Satan gives you freedom. You can do whatever you want to. Now, that's a pretty good concept, at least if you haven't thought it through, without the realization that freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want to do, but to do what you should do, because if you do whatever you want to, you're going to end up with moral chaos and anarchy and really just have terrible, terrible complications and problems in your life.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
All right, now, of course, did they talk to you at all about the people in government or the power of the satanic movement as far as our modern-day society was concerned? Were any of these things revealed to you?
Well, yes. In fact, while in the Masons and involved in the upper echelon of this stuff, it was made very clear that basically the power behind the scenes, was theirs, that they basically called the shots. And at the political leaders, like, for example, I can remember in the 70s, late 70s, we were told that George Bush was a very high-level member of the Illuminati.
They really told you that?
Oh, yes. Oh. And the funny thing was is we were all, when he was, as I recall, mind you, this is, 20 years ago or more, but I believe he was running against Reagan, for the nomination. We were all rooting for Bush. Because he was a high-level Mason and Reagan was not. And, of course, then later on, after he became president, Reagan became president and Bush became vice president, then all of a sudden he was denying that he had ever been a Mason. So I don't know what the story was there, but we were told very emphatically all of a sudden, don't say Bush is a Mason, because the story is out there that, no, he's not a Mason. So there's all these games going on.
Well, of course, he would resign from the Council on Foreign Relations, where he was a member of the board, from the Bilderbergers, from the Trilateral Commission. So he was part and parcel of all of those. I was not aware, so I learned something tonight. I was not aware. I hadn't even thought of him as being a member of the Masonic movement. I know that certainly Gerald Ford and Lyndon Johnson were Masons, as have been so many of our other presidents, Harry Truman, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I'd never thought of Bush, but that certainly would explain so much, not only of his meteoric rise to power, his association with Skull and Bones, but of course why his son is today the President of the United States and moving us towards war. Well, now, of course, what about some of the other things that you were told about the power structure of the United States?
Well, yeah, and I was starting to get into that. We kind of got off on George Bush Senior or whatever, but... Yeah, I mean, we were very much explained to us that, and this was by Manly P. Hall, that essentially there was a blueprint laid out, which essentially you had to follow. And if you did not, as a head of state, and if you did not, this is laid out by the elite, you know, the Illuminati, whatever term you want to use, and that if you didn't follow this, that basically you would be taken down. And we were told, for example, that Nixon, who was involved in this, he was an Illuminatus, and that the reason why he fell into such ignominy is because he got ahead of the schedule. He thought he was so powerful and so popular as a president, which indeed he was. I mean, his second election was a very strong mandate that he could ignore the program. And he initiated contact with China much sooner than the elite wanted him to, and that's why they took him out with Watergate and everything. And that was intended to be partially kind of like an object lesson, that no matter how high you are, you might be the head of the most powerful nation on earth, if you don't do exactly what we tell you, you're going to be history, and your name is going to be dragged through the mud, or, you know, and possibly, as in the case of Kennedy, you might get a bullet through your head.
Well, of course, you know, that concept was laid out at least as far as the morals and dogma. I think it was there that Pike had said that we will control the people who control the rulers of the world, and we will control the rulers of the world. So that, in essence, is what you're saying. Did they ever talk at all about the Skull and Bone Society or the Bohemian Grove or any of these other groups of world leaders and their occult connections or cult underpinnings of their organizations?
Well, oddly enough, I had never heard of the Skull and Bones until after I got saved.
Okay.
Which is sort of interesting. I mean, I didn't travel in precisely those circles, but I did know about the Bohemian Grove, the one of the men who had initiated me into all this stuff, had been at their ceremonies, you know, the giant owl and everything out there in California, and how virtually everybody who was anybody in politics was out there, you know, dancing around and doing all these strange rituals and everything, and it was their way of basically making sure that everybody was on the same page, because, you know, it didn't matter if you were supposedly a liberal or if you were supposedly conservative, you know, you would be part of this movement, and they basically held this over you to keep you in line.
Oh, of course, there's so much sexual promiscuity, both homosexual and heterosexual, goes on there, and I suspect that, you know, they all have it all on videos, and, you know, once they've compromised you, why, they own you, more or less.
Oh, yes, yes, and that's, and a lot of this is done by blackmail, no doubt about it.
Well, now, do you think that the Bohemian Grove was part and parcel of this whole satanic movement, or was it simply a means of controlling the leaders of the country, the leaders of the world?
Well, I don't know for sure. I was I never personally went out there, but I was led to believe that essentially it was kind of a outward thing that was reasonably... Benign doesn't do the trick, but I mean, compared to the real dark stuff, it was just like you say, a lot of sexual shenanigans and cross dressing and you know, both homosexual and heterosexual goings on, but that it was designed more just to kind of, as you say, control these people. It wasn't really where the serious heavy duty stuff was going on. but that it definitely had a function, and that was to keep these guys in line.
Well, we know that, for instance, the Bush, President Bush has been there, I'm talking about George Herbert Walker Bush, and certainly many of the presidents have been there through the years, secretaries of state, the people who control the media, which is why you never read about the Bohemian Grove in the media, certainly the great financiers, about 3,000 of them get together and for all of this fol-de-rol and the train sacrifices and worshiping in front of the great owl. Is that supposedly a caricature of Moloch, or do we have any idea?
Well, of course, the owl is an unclean bird. In the Bible, the owl is also a symbol of the goddess of war, Athena, the goddess of wisdom. It's got a lot of occultic associations. I had not heard that it was related to Moloch, but it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, well, we'll have to get a little more research on that, but right now we're going to have to take a break. When we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Bill Snevlin, and of course, he has an amazing, amazing story to tell. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide right now that you'd like to partner with us in our effort to educate the American people about what's really going on. And, of course, you can do that, if you'd like, by calling our 800 number, which is 1-800-544-8927. Deciding that you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or perhaps you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, if you would. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we want to certainly mention our website, which is RadioLiberty.com, and we hope that you'll go there. You'll encourage other people to go there. The Internet is a wonderful, wonderful means of reaching people across America. And, of course, the advantage to this is people all across America, all across the world, can listen to our programs. In fact, we have a gentleman who's coming in from Germany for our syllabus this weekend. I should mention we really are filled up at the present time. We can't take any more people. Appreciate everybody who's coming and looking forward to seeing you all, but we're just about out of tables and about chairs, and we've already put in the food orders, but some gentlemen hearing our program probably on the Internet, just coming in from Germany, and whether he's coming home or what the circumstances are, but he's going to be with us this weekend, and how exciting it is to have access to the Internet. But if you do not have a computer, this is a good time to get them. They're rather inexpensive. But more than that, it will give you access to our website and the websites that we link to, which we think have excellent, excellent information on them. So we hope that many of you will decide to go to our website, to tell others about our website, about our radio programs, to copy our newsletters, to copy our interesting programs, and get them into other people's hands so they can begin to get the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And so again, if you'd like, of course, you get in touch with our ministry, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bill Snevlin, and of course, we do carry a number of his books. If you're interested in knowing, suggest a donation for any of them, why, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And before I forget, let's, of course, get your website out there, and how can people reach you and your ministry, Bill?
Yes, we do have a website. It is www.withoneaccord.org. And that's withoneaccord.org. And we have lots of our products there and also increasing amounts of free information as well.
All right, fine. Of course, Bill's information really is fascinating. When you were into the satanic movement, did you ever hear anything at all about the Rockefellers or anybody like that?
Well, yeah, we were, and it was made very clear, even though I had not ever meet any of those people personally, but that they, along with, of course, you know, some of these other mossy money families, you know, the Harrimans and of course, over in Europe, the Rothschilds, that basically they were at the very pinnacle of this elite, and that they essentially called the shots right underneath, of course, the ultimate head of all this, which would be Lucifer.
So we're basically talking then about the Rockefellers, the Harrimans, the Rothschilds. Any other names that you can recall?
Well, of course, the Bush family was certainly mentioned in there, and I believe I'm trying to think what the other one. Some of the people that were involved in the starting up of the CIA, Dulles.
No, correct, huh?
A lot of those people were involved, first of all, in this whole thing with Illuminism, because see, a lot of this all hangs together. I mean, the whole idea of intelligence and of manipulating and mind war, mind control, it's all part and parcel of what is done in these occultic organizations at the highest level.
And of course, from my point of view, we've certainly studied the CIA enough to know that it's the largest purveyor of drugs in the United States, certainly is behind many of the assassinations that we've actually seen. And I've even talked to a gentleman who was, his name was L.D. Brown, and he was actually hired by the CIA or as some sort of a contract agent to kill. He was told it was a drug lord, but it turned out to be an American with his wife and two children, and so he didn't take the contract. It turned out to be a man named Terry Reed, who wrote a book called Compromised, and it was a story of George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton. Well, let's go to Robert, who is calling us from Spokane. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Yes, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Hey, listen, I've been listening to your program for a couple of months now. I think it's great, and I've read your book.
But you haven't called before, have you?
No, this is my first time.
That's what I thought. Okay, well, it's good to have you with us.
And I think you're doing a great job. I've read your book. The subject of Skull and Bones keeps coming up on your programs, and you mentioned in your book that Yale University was the only chapter that Skull and Bones was at.
Well, the only one in the United States, supposedly. There was originally one in Germany, and the whole idea was that this was originated in the beneath the Skull and Bones, their logo, 322. They say that sign stands for the fact they were organized in 1832, and they were the second chapter. The first chapter, of course, was somewhere up in Bavaria.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make a point and let you know I went to college at UC Berkeley in California, and there was a Skull and Bones. I was in a fraternity there. I won't mention the name, but I was in a fraternity, and there was a Skull and Bones chapter there, and one of our fraternity members was inducted into that chapter.
I've never heard that before. That's interesting to hear.
And there were, I'm a Christian now and have been for quite some years. Wasn't so much into it when I was in college, but we had two very, very heavy Christian members of our fraternity, and I recall that they were not real happy about the fact that this fellow from our fraternity was being inducted into this secret society, Skull and Bones. And, of course, I didn't make anything of it at the time, but I just wanted to let you know that there was a chapter, and probably still is a chapter in Berkeley, California.
Could you get me anything on that? Do you have any source, any means of getting any information on it? Because I've never heard that before, and I'd love to get some documentation on it. Would you be able to track anything of that down on it?
Gosh, I don't know, because as you know, I mean, these are secret organizations. I can just tell you that I was a member of that fraternity.
You weren't a member of Skull and Bones, though.
No.
And of course,
I almost wasn't a member of the fraternity I joined, because I was a little different than some of the.
You didn't like all that the drinking and all the things that go on there?
Yeah, well, I participated in that, but I was a little different, just on some other matters.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, thank you so much for calling, Robert. Anything you wanted to say?
No, I just wanted to let you know that that there is a chapter and has been, as far as I know, in Berkeley,
okay,
California.
Okay, if there's anything you could get me on that, I'd certainly like to see it. Thank you so very much for calling.
You bet.
All right, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We'd love to hear your questions or comments. And our guest this evening is William Schnevelin. And so he's talking about, of course, what he learned when he was in the upper echelons of this whole world satanic movement. Well, you know, when you left this movement, didn't that sort of put you personally and your family into a certain amount of danger?
Well, of course it did. We got a lot of threats. both, you know, over the phone and in person, we were warned, and of course, I didn't leave this group until I got saved, you know, and that makes a big difference because, you know, once Jesus Christ is in your corner, like I love to tell people, my dad can beat up their dad. So, you know, it's like if God is protecting you and it's His will that you stay alive, I mean, we've had people try and shoot us, we've had people try to run us off the road, but a lot of that kind of diminished once I started writing my books and everything. And I think once you get some books out on these topics, it's like then they realize, well, if we kill this guy now, all it's going to do is make him look like a martyr. And between that and, of course, the Lord's protection, really our that kind of thing has diminished a great deal in the last 10 years or so.
Well, I honestly believe, of course, it's the Lord's protection. I think that they put their mind to it, they'd get you. But, of course, if the Lord wants you doing what you're doing, they're incapable of it. And really, I think that that's what's so very important. And if, I hope our listeners, if they don't remember anything else from this evening, will remember that, you know, when you face the spiritual battle, you have to become totally reliant upon the Lord. Otherwise, you'd be scared to death, number one. And secondly, you would be destroyed by the other side and by Satan. And I'm sure you've many times come under demonic attack in your ministry, haven't you?
Oh, of course. Yeah, we have more than our share of that because look at all the different groups we have mad at us. I mean, you know, it's probably just about the same as you. I mean, we got the Mormons upset, the Masons, the witches. You know, you name it. And so we're probably on a lot of different people's hit parades, you know, but we just give God all the glory and He protects us. Not that we don't every now and then have some incoming fire, you know, various things have happened over the years, attacks on my wife's health, attacks on my health, and of course financial attacks and, you know, stuff of that nature. But God has kept us going and that's all we expect.
And I'll never forget one time I was under a satanic attack. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I've never had that feeling of terrible apprehension. I was going to give a talk at the church, and when I told the minister, he said, you're under demonic attack. And he simply gave me a little prayer to pray, you know, by which I called upon the blood of Jesus Christ to command the devils, the demons, to leave me alone. And, you know, it was the most amazing thing. You pray a prayer like that, and you claim the power of Jesus Christ, and really, they do leave you alone. And this is one thing that has stood me in good stead through the years, and I'm sure you're well aware of that. But I think the average person out there who comes under demonic attack sometimes doesn't understand. Sometimes he succumbs to it.
Yes, and that's partly because I think a lot of believers either are unprepared for that, or they don't want to face that kind of thing, and they don't want to walk in that kind of faith. And all of a sudden they get hit with this, and it's like they get run over by a truck before they even know what happened to them.
Well, my son was telling me the other night that about a gentleman who has a Bible study, and you know, he had a Bible study for a year and doing very well, a lot of people. But when he started talking about satanic attacks and satanic issues, half the people left. They didn't want to hear about that.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there are an awful lot of people who do not want to face the reality of what is really going on in the world today. They like the warm, fuzzy religion where everything's fine, but they don't want to face the fact that we are really involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural and financial and educational battlefield.
Yes, and as I heard one preacher say, put it very well, he says a lot of Christians want to live in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Right. Well, let's go to Gina, who's calling from Moses Lake. Hi, Gina. How are you doing?
Hi. Hi. I haven't really listened to your radio show very often. I'm a Christian. I go to Assembly God Church. I'm very familiar with spiritual battles and things like that.
Right.
But my question was, I was kind of taken back because I'm not real sure how to get what you said about President Bush.
She was talking about George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father.
Oh, right. I thought you guys were talking about the president
now.
No,
we were talking about George Herbert Walker Bush.
Oh, well, I thought, now isn't our president now a Christian?
Well, I've met him. He told me he was a Christian, and then he lied to me, but I can't say what's in his heart. All I can say is he surrounded himself with people from these occult organizations. He's taking us into an unnecessary war. He has done everything he could to prevent an independent investigation of what happened on September 11th. In fact, he's demanded that the new congressional committee, he appoints the chairman of the committee. So, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they so intent upon concealing it? But I can't tell you what's in his heart, but I judge a person by not by what he says, but what he does.
Right, which I didn't.
I did have the unique opportunity of meeting with the President Bush, and there were about 16 or 18 Christians there, and I will have to admit there were only two of us who questioned what he said. Maybe I'm just a little jaded, but I've been at this game for 40 years, and I, when somebody looks me right in the eye and lies to me after saying he's a Christian, Well, all I can say is he shouldn't do things like that. Okay.
Sure. Okay.
Anything else, Gina?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. And of course, we have an awful lot of good Christians out there, who tragically are supporting this coming war. Well, because the president is a Christian, and because of Romans 13, we're told we should not oppose our rulers because by so doing we are certainly in revolt against God. And I really think that we have to judge things prayerfully, but I don't think that blind obedience to rulers is exactly what God expects of us. Do you, Bill?
Well, no. And I think, that's something we need to understand. And I think we started moving in this direction, and then we got off the track a little bit. Is it this war, according to what I was said, the war that is currently being, obviously planned for in Iraq was planned years ago. I was told that we were going to have, so to speak, Gulf War II back in, around the early 1980s.
Now, you were actually at that time in communication then with Manly P. Hall, the Satanist.
Yes.
He told you about the first Gulf War and then the second Gulf War?
Yes.
Well, what did he basically tell you?
Well, the idea with all of this, even starting before that, was the idea to increase the influence of Islam in the West. Even what happened in the Balkans, the Bosnia-Herzegovina thing, the Serbia thing, all of that was designed to increase the elite wanted more and more influence of Islam in Europe.
Now, why would they want the influence of Islam in Europe unless they wanted to create a conflict between the West and Islam?
Well, that's exactly what they want, because, see, these kind of people thrive on that sort of conflict. And they believe, because they have this sort of Hegelian dialectic approach to viewing history, they believe that by creating these conflicts, then out of the ashes of that conflict will emerge a new world order. There's that word again, but the idea that out of these conflicts that they create will come a synthesis, which, of course, will actually be far worse than what came before. Mm-hmm. But that's their goal. They feel it out of order. That's why the motto of the Scottish Rite is order out of chaos. But what they don't tell you is they create the chaos first, so then they can create their order out of the chaos.
And really, I think that is so pivotal to and seminal to understanding what's happening now. And, of course, during the Vietnam War, which was a created war, we never really tried to defeat the enemy there. In fact, we financed the Russians who financed the North Vietnamese all during the war. But during that war, among other things, taking God and prayer out of our schools, and certainly Roe versus Wade, and centralizing power in Washington, D.C. But one of the most important things, which nobody recognized at the time, was changing our immigration laws. We had 50,000 Muslims in America, before 1965. Now we have about 7 million, and of course many of those are radical Islamic militants. Now there are about 1.6 million of the Muslims who are here, according to a recent report, attend these radical Islamic churches where they're indoctrinated in this and Wahhabism or the importance of killing infidels. So, you know, we have created a monster, and I don't think this happened accidentally, do you?
No, I don't believe it did at all. I think it was engineered, again, to create this sort of, just like what they're doing in Europe on a larger scale, they're trying to create the same conflicts here within America, you know, whether it's pitting, you know, Zionists against Nazis, or whether it's pitting Democrats against Republicans, capitalists against communists. That's what they do, and they just sit back and count the money that's rolling in, although it ultimately isn't about money, it's, of course, about power.
Well, let's go a little into what you were told. You were told back in the early 1980s by Mandy P. Hall, who was, at least according to the Scottish Rite magazine, the obituary for Mandy P. Hall was, he was the greatest Masonic philosopher of all time. And he told you then in the early 1980s there would be a first Gulf War and then the second Gulf War. Did he explain to you at all what would happen after the second Gulf War and when the second Gulf War would be? Did he give you a date at all or any idea when it was going to occur?
Oh, yes. All of these things were laid out. I mean, you know, the first Gulf War would happen exactly when it did happen. And the timetable for this war is that it was supposed to happen in the year 2002. Of course, the clock is ticking. I mean, we're down to about, you know, 5 weeks left in the year, and it might very well yet happen. I don't know. But the idea was is that that we would come back in and invade Iraq a second time, and in retaliation to that, that Saddam Hussein, either through his own personal people or through terrorist organizations he supplied, that he would use this as an excuse, if he needed one, to send biological weapons or chemical weapons over to America and basically unleash a sneak biological attack against our nation.
All right.
And that this would be very devastating because there's no way our healthcare system is up to this. I mean, you know, even though they're talking about, oh, well, we have smallpox vaccine and all. I mean, all of this is bogus. I mean, And it would just really be very devastating to our country. We're not ready for this kind of thing.
No, the American public is not ready for any sort of discomfort. You know, the greatest catastrophe that can happen is if our team loses the football game on Sunday. But, you know, we saw that total disruption of the area around Washington, D.C., what, you know, this sniper killing 10 people, what would happen if, you know, 10,000, 100,000 Americans succumbed to a major epidemic?
Yes, and that's exactly what the plan is. And then the next step, according to what I was told, is that between America having its forces spread pretty thin around the world, you know, that they're going to be in Iraq, they're going to be in Afghanistan and wherever else, you know, that in the midst of this and in the midst of our nation being, you know, shaking from all these biological or chemical attacks, that then Russia, who is supposedly a good guy now and is on our side, is going to launch a preemptive nuclear strike against our country. And basically, you know, we're not going to be ready for it, and as a result, we're going to be more or less taken out of action. So that the ultimate plan is for us to be pretty much neutralized so that then the nation of Israel can just be crushed.
Well, of course, God is not going to allow that, at least not the total destruction of Israel.
No, that I want to highlight that. That is the devil's plan. That's
right.
Not necessarily what is going to happen. It's just, you know, that this is what the devil's plan is. And, you know, I've been really talking to everybody I see and said, we need to pray for God's mercy for our country. We need to pray that God would give our leaders wisdom. And, you know, as you say, I mean, I have friends that have supposedly known the current President Bush, and they claim he's a Christian. I have other people that know him, and they claim he's a fraud. And, you know, like you say, no one knows the man's heart except the Lord. But whether he's a Christian or not, we need to pray for him because that is scriptural. And then you pray that he would listen to the voice of God and not to the voice of the enemy.
Well, now, of course, was any mention at all of any other countries being involved? Was it just Iraq? Or, because certainly there's much to suggest that if they were really serious about fighting terrorism, they would go on to Iran, which is really the center of so much of what's going on here in this country and throughout the world. Certainly, if you read the writings of Yosef Podansky, who's the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, in all of his books, at least the last two books, Bin Laden, the man who declared war against America, this most recent one, entitled The High Cost of Peace, he has certainly pointed out that Iran is working very closely with Saudi Arabia and Osama bin Laden. In fact, they finance so much of so many of these terrorist attacks, including the Black Hawk Down episode in Mogadishu back in 1994. Was it 1994, and so many of the other attacks here, certainly the attacks by Hezbollah on the American embassy in 1983, the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. Certainly Iran is the major source of funding and training for so much of what's going on. We never hear about that in this country, but I would anticipate, but I would suspect that if the administration were really serious about attacking terrorism, they would go after Iran as well. Did they say anything at all about any other country, or was it just Iraq?
Well, oddly, other than what I mentioned, no. They mentioned Russia, and of course they mentioned Israel as being the ultimate target. But I think what you're saying is a very cogent analysis. It's just that for whatever reason, it did not seem to fit into the desired picture.
Well, maybe it does fit into the desired picture. In other words, maybe what we're doing has nothing to do with anything logical. Maybe what's going to transpire was simply scripted ahead of time. And after all, when you've got a script, you've got to read the script. You can't ad lib, or you get into real trouble.
Oh, yes.
Well, this is really a fascinating subject, and I know you've talked to David Bay about this. In fact, I told David Bay what you'd said on one of the programs, and I think David has talked to you, and he's got some of that information out, although I think that most people find it difficult to believe that what we're seeing unfolding today is really scripted.
Well, and that's because, again, I think you this whole idea of the conspiratorial view of history, quote-unquote, has gotten a bad press. And I think it's very obvious from the Bible that there is a conspiracy. I think the Bible speaks of such a conspiracy. And whether it's a literal physical conspiracy in the sense of powerful men really meeting in smoke-filled rooms, or whether it's a conspiracy in the sense of the devil sending out his agents to just tweak the minds of various world leaders and make them do the things that they're doing, is really, sort of a moot point. The point is that there is conspiracy against the Lord and against his anointed.
Yeah, Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25 and the second Psalm certainly cover that. And for our listeners up in the great Northwest, I hope that many of you will read Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25 and understand that the scriptures talks about a conspiracy. And of course, when you hear our comedians ridiculing the idea of conspiracy, they're really ridiculing the Word of God. And the common denominator behind everything going on today is this organized, orchestrated, concerted effort, conspiracy against God by the part of Lucifer and his minions. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up in the great Northwest, and then, of course, we'll be back with Bill Snevelin in this next hour, and we'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're up there in the great Northwest, why, get yourself a computer, and you can hear the second hour at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can always reach us here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or if you'd like to reach my ministry, it's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And for Bill's ministry, it is withoneaccord.org, withoneaccord.org. And, of course, if you'd like to learn more about the books that we carry, why, you can just call us, and or you can go directly to Bill. So till tomorrow evening at the same time, to our listeners in the great Northwest, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, we are going to be having a conference this weekend. I have to tell you, we are full. If you haven't already got your order in, why, we're just not going to be able to have any more people come because, the room is only going to hold about 150, and we have over 150 right now coming, and but I hope for all the people who signed up, yes, there'll be room, but we are looking forward to seeing people, hoping that we can educate you about what's down the line, and of course the general theme of our program is going to be preparation, because at least you're going to have to be prepared to look after yourself. Hopefully you'll be able to help others, but if we can't look after ourselves, we're certainly not going to be in a position to help others or to minister to them in the very difficult times that are lying ahead. Now, our guest this evening is Bill Schneblin, and Bill has been on the front lines of this battle for many years, since his conversion to Christianity and turning his back on the dark side, which he'd been part of for many years. He worked with Ed Decker, who's certainly well known to many of our listeners, an expert on both Masonry and Mormonism. How long were you with Ed?
About 5 years.
All right, fine. And then, of course, you went off on your own, and Bill has with One Accord Ministry, and he's speaking out all across America, trying to educate people. What sort of response do you get from people when you tell them the story and reveal that there really is an organized satanic movement at the various highest echelons of our society?
Well, I think it varies. I mean, I'm finding actually a lot more Christians, and maybe it's just the group in which I move, are open to this. They understand this, but a lot of other people just think it's freaky. You know, they as I indicated in the last hour, basically a lot of Christians want to live in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and they don't want to think about some of these some of these things. But more and more Christians, in my experience, seem to be starting to get open to this idea.
Well, I really think it is the effort of a lot of people. I know David Bay, and he's got a ministry that it's just an amazing ministry. I don't know. I think they get 4 million hits a month on their website. Now, that is a lot of hits. And, I'm so glad that they're doing so well, and we have David on our program repeatedly. And there are other people out across America who have basically audiences, not as many as I wish there were, but certainly people who are reaching others. Do you know a fellow named Erskine?
No, he was not familiar.
Right, fine. Well, I'll have to give him your telephone number. He's got a great ministry across America. And there are other people doing exactly the same thing and putting out almost an identical message. Because I really believe that radio is the last means by which we have to reach people. And this is why we hope that the people out there listening who believe in what we're saying will want to support our effort as we gradually expand into new markets. And every couple of months we try to pick up new stations so that we can gradually get people to understand how this whole system fits together, because it's really they're all the pieces of the puzzle out there, and then when you begin putting them together, it doesn't make a pattern, and then when you get enough pieces, that why everything fits together. There are no contradictions at all. It should be so obvious to everybody who is really orchestrating all of these organizations working behind the scenes, and as you have said, that is Lucifer or Satan himself.
Yes. That's absolutely true.
Well, what could we do to be more effective? Do you have any thoughts or suggestions?
Well, I think we as a church need to take what we are more seriously. If we really understood the power that we had through prayer and the power that we had to, in terms of just simply getting the word out I think this whole thing could be turned around. But a lot of Christians, unfortunately, I think, are just playing at church. They aren't educating themselves enough in this stuff, for one thing. And for the other thing, I think a lot of Christians aren't praying like they used to. And I think that with the diminishing of, if you want to call it prayer cover, for lack of a better word, over this nation, the darkness is spreading and the misinformation and the lies are spreading. And that is, I think, the biggest thing I would emphasize is the importance of prayer, the importance of getting the word out, of telling people that you know, people that are within your sphere of influence, about what is going on. And if they just sort of snicker at you, you can go on to the next person.
Well, we actually had Eric Barger on this afternoon. Did you know Eric? He has written a book, of course, on the spirits, and I forgot the exact title, Entertaining Spirits, something like that, and books on dealing with the spiritual warfare. And, he is actually on the road almost all the time, speaking in churches or speaking to Christian groups. The fact that he will get that many invitations to me is an exciting thing, because it means that there are people who are beginning to learn exactly what you and I are trying to say. He can do it by going into a church. Churches don't invite me, of course, mainly because I don't have the chance to go, because I spend all my time behind the microphone. But there are a lot of really encouraging signs out there that people are aware of something. They're looking for answers. And when they perhaps hear our broadcasts, or perhaps read my book, or read your books, books on masonry and witchcraft are so very, very important. But why don't you tell our listeners the titles of some of your books and what's in them?
Well, the first book, a major book, was Wicca, Satan's Little White Lie. That book basically talks about the religion of white witchcraft and where it came from, and partly it's my testimony of how I got involved in it. And then it gets into, really, even though a lot of people think this is a fairly benevolent religion, it's very popular, very politically correct, and yet it can be used to lead people in some very dark things. So it's partly designed to inform Christians, and it's partly designed as an evangelism tool to lead to, you could like give a copy to a person who's thinking of becoming a witch, or maybe he would even actually be a Wiccan, and it might have a powerful effect. We've had some good testimonials from that. The other book, of course, which we've already discussed, is Masonry Beyond the Light. That's kind of the same thing, but it's about Freemasonry. It basically goes through, looks at the history of the Lodge, and then it examines point by point in terms of the Bible. What does Masonry say about God? What does Masonry say about Jesus Christ? What does Masonry say about salvation? How is this biblical? How is this not biblical? And we basically build a pretty formidable case that Christians should not be involved in Masonry. And then we also give the history, and we do explain how Masonry is part of this larger conspiracy that we've been spending the evening discussing. Then the next book was Lucifer Dethroned. That was more or less my wife and my autobiography. How I got into all of these things. Basically, I think, someone said it very well. It's about what Satan can do to a person, and it's about what Jesus Christ can do for a person. And it's the whole thing, my descent into Satanism and vampirism and all kinds of bizarre stuff, and then my glorious salvation in Jesus, as well as a lot of hard-to-find information about the Satanic Brotherhood, how it functions, how to witness to them, how to protect your kids, things of that nature. And finally, we have Blood on the Doorpost, which is our last major book, and that one is more or less designed to be a graduate-level course in spiritual warfare, how to pray for people, how to counsel people, how to protect your family, how to protect your church against the spiritual attacks that come against us.
And really, the only thing you can really do is prayer, isn't it?
Yes, basically, yeah. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal. They're spiritual. But they're very, very mighty and very, very powerful. A lot of people will say, oh, well, at least we can pray. And I say, no, at most we can pray.
Absolutely. But that's really, because in this battle, we're not going to win this on our own. The only way this battle can be won with is God's favor. And God is certainly not going to favor America unless America turns back to him, that's for sure. Well, you know, one of the interesting things I thought would start from the very first book, and it was on witchcraft. And incidentally, we'll put out our telephone number. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there listening and like to give us a call, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But you were talking about witchcraft, and I'll never forget when I was practicing medicine in Africa. I was a professor at a senior surgeon at a large hospital there, and we went to a medical meeting in Johannesburg, as I remember, and my wife went for a trip into a gold mine while I was going to the boring meetings. But there she met a witch doctor. But it was a white woman who had lived with a Venda tribe in Africa. And this woman married a family, had been with the Venda people, where they're over in the east coast of Africa, of South Africa. The family had been there for a couple of generations. So she could, she got along fine with the people there, but she could never be part of them because she was white and they were black, until she decided she would become a witch doctor. So she took her training and her apprenticeship and her, just like you do going into medicine, and after a number of years of study and apprenticeship, she became a full-fledged witch doctor. But her point was she could tap into these spirits, but she was using white magic, not black magic. And, of course, what would your response be to something like that?
Well, and this isn't to say that these people may not have good motives, but the problem is that any power, there's only two places you get spiritual power in the universe. One is from Jesus Christ, the other is from the devil. I try to explain to people that if you are seeking power in the wrong way from the wrong places, then that power is going to come from the devil. And that's where this power comes from, even though she may not believe this to be the case. And ultimately, and I can tell you this from my own personal experience, there is a very, very horrible price to pay, because the devil never gives you anything for free. He always exacts a very bad price in the end.
And, of course, she had learned how to shake the bones and, of course, to tap into these dark spirits. And she actually had the supernatural powers. It had taken her a long time to get them. But I suspect she was a very nice person who had no idea what she had gotten herself into. And I think that's the problem. So many good people say, well, if I could just have this power, think of all the good I could do. And aren't some people motivated by good, actually going into that, thinking that somehow they can tap into this power and do wonderful good things for people?
Yes. In fact, that's why I originally got into it. Look where I ended up. I mean, I started out with the most altruistic of motives. I was going to heal people. I was going to help people. And yet gradually, at the risk of sounding like Star Wars, the dark side of the Force keeps taking over, and you end up getting corrupt. And you end up getting more and more corrupt.
And I think this is why, of course, in the scriptures, it tells us to avoid any of these things, a divination or anything that, of course, it smacks of spiritualism. God's advice is pretty sound. And when you begin, when you don't follow his advice, why, you're laying yourself open for all sorts of tragedy. And I think it was, had it perhaps not been for the fact that God had a plan for you in your life, why you might very well have been carried off totally into the depravity, which is what Satan represents today.
Oh, yes. And I think it's important to remember the Bible tells us that God is light, and it says that in him there is no darkness. And so when you hear these people talking about the dark side and the light side, well, whatever that force is, it's not God.
Well, you say that the Bible says God is light, and of course you're absolutely right, but this whole Luciferianism is a counterfeit. And they claim that Lucifer is the light, and
sure,
as you pointed out in the first hour, God is on the dark side. And, I'll never forget reading Manly P. Hall, Morals and Dogma, where he tells his readers that there in the Garden of Eden, it was, the devil, or the demon, I think was the term he used, who told Adam and Eve that they were not to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But then the angel of light came along and more or less rescued them, gave them the truth. And that was really the secret of what it was all about. When people embraced, the message of the angel of light and repudiated the demon, who was God, why, of course, what the God we worship, then they could truly be free. And until people understand that that is the very essence of what this is all about, freedom is to them is the ability to do whatever you want to do. And unfortunately, you sure get into a lot of trouble when you do that, don't you, Bill?
Well, yes, yes, because that's just license. That's not freedom.
Well, of course, our job is to let people understand that if it's between freedom under God and freedom under Lucifer, and one has rules and regulations and the other has all sorts of consequences, as our young people, so many young people are learning today, with the incidents growing, just exploding incidents of sexually transmitted disease in our teenagers who've been told, well, just practice safe sex in their schools and, by the Centers for Disease Control and even by many of their doctors. Just practice safe sex. We're going to give you a shot so you won't get pregnant. We're going to give you a condom so you won't get HIV disease. And then just go ahead and live it up, act responsibly. Well, acting responsibly is not being promiscuous with either one of those things. In fact, a fascinating book called Epidemic, we've interviewed the author recently, and I don't think she's coming from a religious perspective at all, and a very nice lady. But for years she was out there prescribing all of these contraceptives until she saw these young people coming back with these diseases that they're never going to get over. There's no treatment for. And suddenly the realization that what she was doing and what she was advising was creating an epidemic that was going to destroy the lives of so many young people. And at that time, of course, she repented of her what she had done and really tried to let the young people know that there is no free lunch and there is no safe sex. And that, or safer sex, or call it what you will. There are rules, there are regulations, and you violate God's rule, you're going to pay a terrible, terrible, terrible consequence, not because God is a killjoy, but because he wants you to live the life of purity that that he has advocated.
Absolutely, that's right.
Well, Bill, I know certainly we've talked about your experience. Do you get many invitations to go into churches to tell your story?
Well, not as many as I'd like, to be honest.
Will you go? I mean, do you want to put a plug in for people to invite you?
I would be more than happy to. I mean, we're getting more and more. But I'm happy to travel and speak, and delighted to come and minister, whether it's just a one night thing or whether people would like a couple of day seminar, whatever the case might be. I speak on a wide variety of topics, as your listeners might imagine, and I'm delighted to come.
I know we actually offer your two videos you're talking about inside the Illuminati and your experiences, of course, within the Masonic movement. And I think we get those from the Prophecy Club along with my video, The Secrets of the Illuminati. So we offer that as a special because we think it's such an important message. And, of course, one of the things that we face today is the total ignorance of the average American about this symbology which they have hidden in plain sight. And, of course, you talk about that symbol on the back of the dollar bill. What is the true significance of the pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye?
Well, it's intended to be a symbol of Antichrist. The idea is that the true capstone, of course, if you want to call it that, is Jesus Christ, because it says in the Bible that, the stone which your bill is rejected has become the headstone of the corner. And, of course, that there's only one way you can have the headstone of the corner, and that's if it's the top of a pyramid. But yet, instead of acknowledging Jesus at the top of the pyramid, instead they have this all-seeing eye monstrosity, which, of course, nowhere in the Bible does it say God is a cyclops, amen, So it's obviously not talking about God. The pyramid itself is designed, it's got 13 ranks in it, and those represent the 13 levels of power within the Brotherhood. Of course, culminating at the top with the nine unknown men, and then with what are called the seven, who are right underneath Lucifer, who is the all-seeing eye. So really every aspect, especially on the obverse of the reverse of the seal, the obverse is the front, with the pyramid, the whole, everything in that is basically designed as a coded message that this year, the year that's chiseled in the bottom of the pyramid, which is of course 1776, begins a new world order. And of course that New World Order was on May 1st, 1776, when the Illuminati was formed by Adam Weishaupt.
Well, don't you think that they have dual meanings for things? In other words, to the average person who was a patriotic American, the symbology of 13 on the back of the dollar bill, you know, there are 13 stars there on the eagle and 13, you know, stripes and 13 olive branches and 13 arrows. And most people think that a 13 has to do with the 13 colonies, but it really didn't, did it?
No, I mean, that is obviously the, what you would say, the exoteric, the
right.
outer interpretation. But the inner interpretation is, as I have said, you know, the number 13 has a long and sinister, yet darkly sacred reputation. It goes all the way back to the Knights Templar in the Middle Ages, you know, and so that's partly why that number is worked in there.
And, of course, if you actually get your dollar bill out and you count the number of steps in the pyramid, there are 13 of them. And the same thing with 1776. To most people, they would say 1776, Declaration of Independence. But, of course, to the occultists, 1776, the Illuminati. You know, one of the things that are very interesting, that we have this new giant computer program headed by Admiral Poindexter, the military, the Pentagon is setting up to track all of our movements. And it is said, and I haven't seen this, but it says on the Drudge Report, Rick Wiles' website, and I talked to David Biles about this, and several people have commented that the logo for this division, this of the military, is that same pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye. And how blatant can they be? And yet, of course, they have the feeling that most people are so blind they cannot see. And really, I almost have this feeling, having been at this for 40 years, that there's tremendous spirits of blindness in the people. Do you ever have that feeling that it's almost a supernatural force that keeps them from seeing what's so obviously the truth?
Oh, I do believe, and even among, unfortunately, even among Christians, I think this is often the case, that unless you really try to walk closely with God and are attuned to God, this stuff goes right over your head, and you're right, it is a spiritual blindness, which you know, most Christians don't even see, because, and I'm sure you experience this too, you know, that sometimes the most vehement opposition to this message comes from supposed Christians.
No, I'm sure, yeah, that's absolutely true. and, of course, you know, the symbols are all there. I mean, anybody can see them. They're hidden in plain sight, and yet Christians look at them every day and simply do not see or do not understand or do not want to understand the occult message that is left there. So people on the other side know what this is all about, but the average individual, the average Christian has no idea. It's sort of like that picture that they show sometimes, and if you look at it one way, it's a beautiful woman. You look at another way, it's a horrible old hag. And you can see it, whichever way you see it, it would be entirely different. In other words, you can't see both of them at the same time, or at least your mind won't see both of them at the same time. And of course, then when somebody points out why it's so obvious, and the same thing is true with all this symbology that is out there. In fact, do you know Dr. Kathy Burns and her work?
Oh, yes, sure.
And Kathy's done a wonderful job on her Freemasonic and occult symbols, the book that she wrote. I think that's really one of the more important books we have available, because it lays out this whole incredible a series of logos that so many of our major corporations are involved in this, and our major institutions are involved in it. And as I say, this new army division that is setting up a gigantic computer to monitor every law-abiding citizen in America, their telephone calls, their emails, their travel, everything about them, what they buy in the stores, combining both the private and the government computer systems, so everything will be on your file, and they can punch your name up, and everything about you will be there. And you know, and they're using this symbol on the back of the dollar bill, and people just don't understand that this is a symbol, basically, of evil. Well, now, of course, I'm sure that there are many other symbols out there that people see. Can you think of any others that would be something that would be very common to people?
Oh, let me think. Well, of course, you know, you see like this this symbol a lot, as part of Lucent Technologies. And it's sort of a kind of done in a Japanese calligraphic style of the circle.
Yes, uh-huh.
You know, and that is, of course, a very common symbol in the occult and witchcraft of the one, you know, and of course the one is intended to be Lucifer. And of course, this invariably makes a lot of people just kind of groan, but the whole thing of the Statue of Liberty, you know, one of our most revered patriotic symbols, and yet that was designed by a Freemason in France as a gift to the Freemasons of America. And the torch that the lady led, that is actually the goddess of witchcraft, the goddess of the Enlightenment, if you will, the goddess of the French Revolution, and it is basically, light is the light of Lucifer.
But the people cannot understand that because they've been told that is the Statue of Liberty, not understanding that this concept of liberty, equality, fraternity came out of the Masonic Revolution in 1789.
Of course. And yet, you know, again, most people, they just think of that as, oh, this wonderful symbol of America and freedom, and so many immigrants, you know, associate with that. And, you know, again, that is certainly a meaning of the Statue of Liberty, but the original intent is, again, that it would be a symbol of the light of Lucifer.
Well, have you ever studied the laying out of the Washington, D.C., the architecture of our nation's capital, the plan of the streets, and its occult significance?
Oh, my, yes. In fact, Ed Decker and I did it. I think we were one of the first to do a thorough study on that subject and put it out in a little booklet called Satan's Door to America. And it is astonishing. And then the Masons will actually brag about this, that the man that laid out the street plan and everything, the architecture of our nation's capital, was in fact a Freemason. And you can find hexagrams and pentagrams and squares and compasses and goat's heads all over the plan of the streets of our nation's capital. And what's interesting is there's this enormous inverted pentagram pointed right at the White House, which is, of course, one of the premier symbols of Satanism. And, you know, so is it any wonder that our nation is under such spiritual attack?
And I think that really it should be so obvious. In fact, there was a new book called The Spiritual Architecture, or The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, actually published by HarperCollins, and we offer that book through our ministry. And yet, of course, the average individual finds it difficult to believe that this thing has been going on for almost 200 years. In fact, it's been going on since the Garden of Eden. But right here in America, there was this occult influence that was here at the very time our nation was founded. In fact, it was here even before that. And those of you who've read my book know that, you know, the Rosicrucians came to America back about 1640 with the idea of taking control of this government. And one day it would be used to move America, indeed the whole world, into this one world order. Did you ever get into the background of this group that was sent over by Francis Bacon?
You mean the Rosicrucian group?
The Rosicrucian group, right.
Yes, yeah. Of course, I was in the Rosicrucian.
You were a Rosicrucian, too?
Yes. I just don't usually mention that because that sort of pales into significance next to some of the other stuff. But I got about as high as you can get within the San Jose branch of the Rosicrucians, and they give you a thorough study in that, the whole issue and how they came over here. And in fact, it's very interesting to look at the influence that the Ephrata, Pennsylvania Rosicrucian group had on Joseph Smith and the foundations of the occult elements in Mormonism.
Mm-hmm. No, was primarily then Rosicrucian more than a Masonic. Many people, of course, say he was fairly high in the Masonic movement, and that's where the ideas came from. But it's really Rosicrucian then.
Well, it is both. But you see, Joseph Smith did not become a Master Mason until really fairly late in his career. He wasn't made a Master Mason until a couple 3 years before his death.
Oh, I see.
Whereas his father, Joseph Smith Sr., seems to have been involved with a lot of their ideas. You know, they had the ideas of wearing sacred garments, of wearing aprons, and of those garments protecting themselves. And, you know, the whole Rosicrucian viewpoint, which is, you know, basically very similar to all this other stuff, the idea of mysticism and enlightenment and gaining, you know, higher levels of consciousness through alchemy and this sort of thing. It's essentially the same concept over and over again.
Well, that is fascinating. That's something I didn't know, and I'd always attributed the Masonic origins, Mormon origins, to Masonry, but that's a whole different slant on things. We're going to be right back here in just a few moments with Bill Snevlin. Invite your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you once again that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure, because, of course, when America was first founded, there were two forces, one the occult, one the Christian. Initially, the Christian was the dominant. Today, the occult is the dominant force, directing the course of affairs in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. So if you'd like, of course, to help us get people, give people an understanding of the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged, if you'd like to, of course, partner with us in this great and noble effort, why, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one if you haven't had one before. And our September newsletter deals with what happened a year earlier on September 11th. And, of course, what this was really all about. Our October newsletter is simply Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the House Intelligence and Senate Intelligence Committee on the 18th of September of this year. And with the video cameras grinding and everybody taking notes and getting copies of her testimony, it was almost totally blacked out by the controlled media. Now, you'll occasionally see pictures of Kristen in the newspaper, and they'll get some state part of what she said, but they're never going to tell you what she said in her testimony, because it was one of the most forceful, intelligent, organized things I've read about the happenings of September 11, 2001. Kristen's husband died there in the South Tower. And it's touching, it's powerful, and certainly I think it's one of the most important things written about the attack. And so if you'd like to get a free copy of my October newsletter, which is Kristen Breitweiser's testimony, and I did a program with my friend Dave Wagner this afternoon, and he said, you know, both you and I, Stan, have put out videos, but there's more in that testimony than you will ever find in either one of our videos. And I think that's absolutely true. I think the videos are excellent, but this is a powerful, powerful statement. So I will be glad to send that to you free of charge. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the October newsletter. And we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest for this evening, Bill Snevlin. And of course, we'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Bill Snevlin. Of course, he was gracious enough to stay on for a second hour because our regularly scheduled guest had, apparently he hadn't completed the treatise he was supposed to complete and didn't feel he was prepared to come on. So I figure that Bill Snevlin has completed a number of treatises on this subject, certainly one of the best informed people in our country today on this subject. Of the dark side, these various occult movements which dominate almost every aspect of our society. So if you'd like to talk to Bill, you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Well, Bill, as you were studying this, did you ever delve into the influence of banking on this? And where do the Knights Templar fit into this whole story? And for our listeners out there, maybe you could tell them who the Knights Templar were and, of course, where they fit in and then where banking fits in.
Well, that's a pretty deep subject, but basically, very early on, oddly enough, this some of your listeners may have heard, I studied in with my wife under the Grand Druid of North America. One of the first things he did was chuck us the book, None Dare Call It Treason. And so here we're reading this book, and all the, this guy had all this literature from the John Birch Society and everything. And so right up front, you know, he explained to us, yeah, this stuff is all right on.
He liked John Stormer's book. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
When I tell John that the Druids are passing out his books.
Yeah, I thought that would be kind of rich. Anyway, and really that was my first exposure to those concepts. And of course, you know, if you trace through both magic and esotericism and Freemasonry down through the last 1,000 years, the names of the Knights Templar keep cropping up. And it appears as though they were the ones that basically created the modern banking system about, you know, 900 years ago. And what they originally started out as a fairly benign organization, they were intended to be sort of a monastic knighthood order to protect pilgrims that were going to the Holy Land. And, of course, this was when we were in the Crusades and trying once again to fight back Islam and regain the Holy Land from the Turks. And so basically that was their original idea, was that they were there to help protect pilgrims, to kind of protect the holy sites, quote-unquote. But they gradually started charging money for this, and the way that they, I believe by my research, that they actually invented the idea of the check, that you would give them your money back in Europe, and they would give you a piece of paper, and then you would travel and not worry about being, you know, set upon by bandits. Then when you got to the Holy Land, you'd give them the piece of paper, and they'd give you the requisite amount of gold back, less, of course, a little bit of, you know, handling charge, as we'd call it today. And so they became very, very wealthy. They kind of strayed from their original, you know, somewhat mendicant order-type foundations, and ended up becoming the most powerful, really, they were more powerful than the church or any single nation in Europe by the time of their downfall. And they just got too powerful, and the story goes that basically the King of France, Philippe le Bel, and he more or less had the current Pope in his pocket, and so the two combined together to accuse the Templars of heresy. Warrants were issued, oddly enough, on Friday the 13th. That's where Friday the 13th got its initial sinister reputation, and they basically went out and arrested as many of the Templars as they could find and tortured them and tried to extract confessions from them and also tried to find out where their gold was, because they had this fabulous treasure which was supposedly never found. And some researchers claim that it was taken, that some of the leaders of the Templar organization had advance warning, and so they put it on the fleet of ships they had and sailed around the Strait of Gibraltar and took it up to Scotland. And others don't know really where it is. But in any event, the Templars were basically accused of black magic, sorcery, idolatry, and burned at the stake. The last Grand Master was Jacques de Molay, which is where the modern Masons have to get their order of de Molay from, is this Jacques de Molay. And he died cursing the king and cursing the Pope, and both of them were dead within the year. And after that, what I was told is that basically what was left of the Templar organization sort of went subterranean and emerged about a century later as the Rosicrucian Order, and basically disseminated some of their ideas through that and then submerged again, and then emerged another century or so after that as the Stonemasons Guild, and basically became the origins of the modern Freemasonic Order. And of course, if you look at modern Masonry, it is full of references to the Knights Templar. I mentioned the de Molay order. Many of the Scottish Rite degrees lionized Jacques de Molay, lionized the Knights Templar. And of course, the highest degree in the York Rite is called the Knight Templar degree. So, and along the way, the Templars have, of course, been interwoven with higher finance and banking. And of course, basically today, banking is at the highest level, of course, run by the occult elite.
And I really think that is what's so important. And, you know, it took me years before I suddenly began to understand that this is what energizes these people. They've been given the wealth of the world. They've been given this monetary system that has allowed them to, create money out of nothing, control politicians, control governments. And of course, they had to be tied into this whole world occult system. You certainly verify that these people really are part of this world Luciferian elite, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's all part and parcel of the same thing.
And of course, for our listeners, the Templars they arrested Jacques de Molay on the 13th of October, 1307. And a couple of years later, he was burned at the stake. If you read Manly P. Hall, he will tell you that there's some people who think that the King of France simply killed Jacques de Molay and broke up the Templars to get their wealth. And then, of course, the people on the other side say that no, that they were actually Luciferians. But if you read Manly P. Hall and his late lectures in ancient philosophy, he will tell you that they truly were part of this world occult movement, and that is why they had to be destroyed, because they had learned the secret, and of course the secret was that Lucifer was God. And so here you break them up in the 13th of October, 1307, and then it is in the 1400s, as Bill says, that the Rosicrucians surface. And then, of course, they're around for a time, and of course, they really sort of stayed around because in the 1600s, it was about 1640 when Francis Bacon, who was a Rosicrucian, sent his representatives to the New World. And then it was early in the 1700s when the first Masonic guilds were, Masonic lodges were founded. Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, 1717.
Right.
But one thing that's interesting is about 50 to 60 years before that, is the first reference to Masons as some sort of society in the English language. And it's from a poem called Muses Threnody. And the line is this: "For we are brethren of the rosy cross, and we have the Mason word and second sight."
Really, I'd never heard that before. So this would be probably, what, about 1660 then?
I'm pulling it out of thin air. I mean, I do have it documented in my book, Masonry Beyond the Light. But that's the first recorded mention of it. There it is right there associated with both the Rosicrucians, the Rosy Cross, which is just what the Rosicrucian term means. And then the second sight is, of course, another term for the occult ability to see, like clairvoyantly or something of that nature.
Well, of course, you know, we have this Rosicrucian temple over here in San Jose. Aren't there several different branches of Rosicrucianism in America today? Or are they all the same?
No. Well, they probably have a somewhat similar, but I hate to say it, but it's kind of like the Protestant church. I mean, there's the Oceanside, California Rosicrucians that are not as well known, that were started by Max Heindahl. And then I believe personally the more authentic branch is the one that's over there in San Jose with their beautiful, nice Egyptian temples and everything. That was the one I was in. And there are also more esoteric branches of the, like, for example, Aleister Crowley was a member of a high-level Rosicrucian Masonic order called the Ordo Templi Orientis. There's that word again. In English, it means the Order of Eastern Templars. So there's a nice Templar again showing up. And there's many different occultic, more heavy, because really, you can go very high in the Amorc, which is the San Jose branch of Rosicrucianism, and not really learn very much. I mean, you know, we had people that we initiated into witchcraft, and they said we taught them more in one night than they learned in 5 years of being in Amorc. So it's not real heavy-duty stuff. But if you find out some of these European groups, are very much more heavy duty.
And of course, all of these groups really interlock throughout the world. You have, of course, your Masons, you have your Rosicrucians, you have your Theosophists, you have your New Age, and you have your members of the Lucis Trust. Did you ever get at all into the Lucis Trust at all, Bill?
Yes, to a certain extent. I read some of Alice Bailey's books, of course, and you know, but we were a little bit more involved with the more Theosophical branch of things and, of course, the more Luciferian branch of things.
Well, what was the relationship between the Theosophists and the Masons and the Satanists?
Well, right from the start, it was, you know, I mean, it was very, very profound because right off the bat, for example, Albert Pike was very good friends with Madame Blavatsky. And, of course, Blavatsky was the woman that started the Theosophical Society. They were almost soulmates.
And, of course, Albert Pike was the man who wrote Morals and Dogma, which became the more or less the Bible for modern-day Masonry and introduced all of these occult, or at least codified all of these occult rituals, which are still practiced to this very day.
Oh, yes, yes. And, yeah, he was in the 19th and early 20th century to Masonry what Manly P. Hall was for the last, 75 years or so of the last century. Mighty philosopher of Freemasonry and the occult. And right down the line, I mean, if you study the writings of Madame Blavatsky, which, believe me, is not an easy thing to do. I mean, her book, Isis Unveiled and the Secret Doctrine,
right.
it's like trying to read a phone directory. But
I think the phone directory is probably more exciting. But I'll tell you what, I will have to admit that you try to read Blavatsky, you need an encyclopedia and a dictionary there to, I mean, the terminology, the words, there's no way that this illiterate woman who never even graduated from high school could possibly have written this. Of course, this was all channeled to her. She readily admitted this was all channeled to her by her Tibetan master.
Oh, sure, Jawal Kool, right. El Mori, and all those guys, yeah, right. And yeah, it is channeled, but it's very much at the core of the secret doctrine, which you will find both in Freemasonry and in Rosicrucianism, and it's all basically the same thing. It's just that, of course, to the world, the Theosophical Society is presented as being a very white light occult group, But, like, we were privileged to go in to the world headquarters of the Theosophical Society, oddly enough, the same time that I was inducted into Satanism.
Was that back in Wheaton or what?
Yeah, back in Wheaton, this big old Adams Family-type mansion up in the hills. Yeah, it's ironic. It's right near the college where Billy Graham, graduated and got his degree. But anyway, and there's some very sinister stuff. I mean, some of the books in there are very, very dark and, they have the old, magazines that used to be called Lucifer back in the 19th century, and the whole thing is given over to Lucifer. It's just nowadays they've tried to slap on a kind of veneer, over it, which makes it more like white light occultism.
Is that open? Can anybody go into that mansion, or do you have to be one of the
people? Parts of it are open, but the parts that we got into are not open to the public.
I see. And this is really sort of the where the very heart of the Theosophical movement in the United States is centered?
Yes, I believe in fact it's the world headquarters.
Okay.
I know that they have another headquarters over in Madras, India, but I think this is now the world headquarters.
They have one down in Ojai in Southern California, but it's really sort of it's not very impressive. It's just sort of a great big building up on the top of a hill, but it sounds like where you were is where the real dark side originates.
Yeah, and of course the one in Ojai is also the headquarters of the Liberal Catholic Church, which is their liturgical branch.
The Liberal Catholic Church is the liturgical branch of Theosophy?
Yes, yes.
Oh my goodness.
In fact, if you look at the history of that, because I was in that too, yeah, you look back in that, and you will find that the founding bishops of the Liberal Catholic Church were all very high-level theosophists, people like Charles Leadbeater and Charles Wedgwood and C.W. Leadbeater. Those are the founding bishops of the old Catholic Church, the Liberal Catholic Church. And to this day, although they have no official connection, basically you'll find that virtually all of the members of the Liberal Catholic Church are theosophists.
Well, now, of course, we hear rumors, and in some of the writings of Malachi Martin, who had been a Jesuit priest, suggest that there was strong Masonic infiltration into the, into the Vatican itself. And we know that I think it was Pope Paul VI who talked about the smokes of Satan circulating over the Vatican. That was shortly before his untimely death. Have you ever gone into that, the Masonic influence within Catholicism?
Well, yes. In fact, there's very strong documented evidence that John the 23rd, who of course is everybody's favorite pope, good Pope John, they called him, that he was a very high level Rosicrucian, and that he was a very high level Freemason before he was made the Cardinal Archbishop of Venice. So here you have the paradox of the man who was elected Pope in 1958 being an extremely high-level Rosicrucian, which supposedly would disqualify him from the very office.
Well, of course, what he did was undermine the very tenets of the Catholic faith, and even though I'm not a Catholic, certainly Catholicism has maintained the Christian religion, or at least many tenets of the Christian religion for almost 2,000 years. And
yet,
of course, Pope John John the 23rd really destroyed the Catholic Church.
In many respects, you're right, and then what he didn't do, Paul the VI did, because the other thing that relates to your question is, a lot of people don't realize this, but Paul the VI, who we used to call Paul the 666, he doubled the size of the College of Cardinals. At the time, at the beginning of his pontificate, there were 75 cardinals. That was the limit. He doubled the size of the College of Cardinals to 150, and then proceeded to create 75 new cardinals. And almost all of the cardinals he created were Freemasons.
Now, who was the one who died after just a few days then?
That was John Paul I.
That was John. Who was it who talked about the smoke of Satan over the Vatican?
That was Paul the VI.
That was Paul the VI.
Interestingly enough, yes. And what's interesting about that little anecdote I just told you is that one of the cardinals that was created at that time was Karol Wojtyła, who is now, of course, the Pope. And I have every reason to believe that the current Pope is a Freemason.
Well, you know, it was so interesting that we have an interview with Malachi Martin. It's in our four-table set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin, in which he tells about how when the Pope John Paul I died, and they were going to have a new Pope, and there was another man who was actually selected. And he was, of course, going to go and accept the papacy, and somebody handed him a little slip of paper, and it said, if you accept the papacy, you and every member of your family will be killed. Well, you know, when you get that's sort of like getting an offer for the mafia. And
yes.
He turned down the papacy, and they had another vote. And, of course, we all know what happened.
Boy, I'd like to hear that tape interview.
Yeah, would you like to? I'll try to remember to get it for you. It's it gives you such insight. Talking to people, from various aspects of the, what's going on, and I've learned a great deal from you, Bill. I had an opportunity to spend a fair amount of time with Malachi Martin. This is actually not an interview I did; it's one he did with John Loeffler. But, you know, in the process of talking, as you talk for a period of time, you get more and more and more information. Actually, I've learned more from you tonight than at any of the other interviews we've done, and that's many of them through the years. So it's really been a fascinating experience for me, as well as, I hope, for our listening audience.
Well, praise God, yes.
Okay, fine. And, well, if you're out there in the listening audience, it's your last chance to call, because we've only got a few minutes before we have to let Bill go. But the idea, the thought that the Masons could have infiltrated the Vatican itself, and yet there is no question in my mind that many of these people are there. Malachi Martin even talked about the satanic ceremonies that were carried out in the basement of the Vatican in his book Windswept House. And I talked to Malachi about that book, and he said, well, of course, it was all true. He couldn't necessarily name names, but it was pretty obvious who he was talking about when he was talking about the cardinals who were Satanists and homosexuals and who were dominating the Catholic Church right here in the United States. Now, fortunately, there were some good cardinals, too. There were some people who were loyal to the traditional faith, but, the church had been so permeated, by the Masons. But we shouldn't just pick on the Catholics. What about the Masonic influence within the Protestant Church today?
Oh, my. Well, it is, and even in supposedly a good fundamentalist, institution like the Southern Baptist Church is, crawling, and I use that term advisedly, crawling with Freemasons. Repeatedly, people have tried to get the Southern Baptist Convention, people like Dr. Larry Holly, I don't know if you know him or not.
Yes, I do. He did a great job on
this. Yeah, trying to get this resolution out, and they just kept out of tabling it, and finally they passed a very watered-down, wimpy version of it, but, they just will not stand on this, because the joke is that if they said either you become a either you renounce the Masons or else leave the Southern Baptist Convention, that basically they lose about half of their members. So, and of course, many liberal, when I say liberal denominations, I mean like the more mainline denominations, the Congregationalists, and some branches of the Lutheran Church, some branches of the Methodist Church, and of course the Episcopalians and Anglicans. Many, many people in there are Masons.
I think this is really the big problem today, and this is why the Church won't speak out on this, is not only in some instances people are afraid to speak out, because if you do, if you speak out as a minister against Masonry, you will lose your pulpit. Another reason that people don't speak out is because they actually are Masons. And whether they know what they're into or not, I suspect that they all may have an inkling what they're into. And yet, how could you as a minister admit that you were part of an occult organization?
It is a challenge, you know. And yet many ministers have left. I've had many calls from both elders, deacons, and even pastors who have said they've read my book and just, you know, they felt convicted by the Lord and they renounced the lodge. And sometimes you're right, it cost them their pulpit.
And, Chris, the fact that this goes on in America today and it is not talked about is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, certainly we're just about out of time. Hell, I know it's getting late back there, and you're probably exhausted, although you sound better than I do in lots of respects. What parting thought would you like to leave with your our listeners tonight? And please get your website out just one more time.
Oh, sure, yes. Number. Our website is www.withoneaccord.org, and that's withoneaccord.org, no spaces, no capitals. And I think really the thing, I don't want to leave people with fear. I just want to have them understand what is going on here, and if people get anything else from my story, I want them to get the idea that the power of God is so much greater than the power of Satan, and no matter what, you know, hell tries to do to hurt you, there's no power that hell can create that heaven cannot heal. And no matter how deeply you're involved in something, I mean, maybe you're listening to this and you're not even a Christian, if God can save me, he can save anybody. The limitless power of God's mercy and grace is just beyond human comprehension. And I just give all the praise and glory to Jesus.
Beautifully said, Bill, and of course we appreciate so much your being with us. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and something we've said tonight has touched your heart, we hope that you'll give us a call, or you'll just get down on your knees and ask Christ to come into your heart. And that's really what it takes in the final analysis, simply saying, I can't do it on my own. I'm quite willing to let you take over my life. And I will tell you, if you say that in all sincerity, your life will change forevermore. Well, Bill, God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a fascinating
It's always a pleasure.
Okay, fine. Well, good night, and we'll be talking to you again shortly.
God bless you,
and
too.
You too. Bye-bye. And that, of course, is Bill Schnevelin. I hope you enjoyed the program, and I hope you learned something from it. I certainly did. And the opportunity to spend 2 hours with somebody who's been in all of these organizations and known certainly somebody like Manly P. Hall, really the leading Satanist of North America, probably of the world, during his tenure here on Earth. Why, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Okay, I'll be working.
Oh, you working regularly on the job?
Pretty much. Okay, I'm so glad for that.
Yeah.
Well, now, would you be able to continue coming up on Thursday?
I would. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, fine. Do you want me to call him down there and tell him not to call you Thursday?
Yeah.
No, I'm just joking. Here, I'll walk out for you.
Okay.
I'm glad you got something going for you.